There were these days I can remember from grade school, and maybe you had the same ones, and I'm willing to bet that these days are a lot different for Lisa nowadays than it used to be for us. But it was the day when you would walk into class, and the one stable feature of the classroom was suspiciously missing, and that was your teacher, right? When you walked into the classroom and didn't see your regular, Lisa's already smirking, she knows where this is going. You didn't see your teacher there. You knew something was afoot, right? The teacher was absent. And so you were given a substitute teacher, and your whole day hinged upon which substitute teacher this was, right? If it was the best kind of substitute teacher, and I'm not putting words in your mouth, Lisa, but if it was my favorite kind of substitute teacher, it meant the TV cart was coming into the room that day, right? If it was the other kind of teacher, it was the one who followed the lesson plan that the absent teacher left for them to follow for the day. But whether or not you got the TV sub or the curriculum sub, the fact remained the same. At some point, the absent teacher was going to come back to the classroom, and there would be a reckoning day. You would have to catch up or at least go over what was done in the teacher's absence, right? As we reach the end of the year in our annual lectionary, the texts that are assigned to us begin to ask the pressing questions on the minds of Jesus' followers in the years following His departure. For the communities of Jesus' followers, there's a real sort of existential crisis that takes place once Jesus leaves their clear and present sight. What are they to do now? How are they supposed to carry on? What are they going to do while their teacher is absent? Just as importantly, when is he coming back? You can hear all of these anxieties in Paul's response to the Thessalonians this morning when he tells them not to worry themselves. They know that the day of the Lord will come unexpectedly like a thief in the night. These are also the questions that undoubtedly circulated around Matthew's target audience as well. Because after all, it's towards these anxieties and doubts that Jesus addresses his series of eschatological parables, his parables about the way things are going to end. Counted among these parables is the parable of talents that we heard this morning. In it, Jesus offers a cautionary tale about how things may go once he is out of sight. And in it, he compares this time to a wealthy man who is getting ready to go on a long journey. As he is getting ready to leave, he entrusts his property to his slaves. To the first of his slaves, he leaves a total of 5 talents. To the second, a total of 2 talents. And to his third slave, a total of 1 talent. Each of these increments, mind you, represent an exorbitant amount of money. Really, these talents are lifetimes worth of the average daily wage for laborers. And yet, the master leaves these gifts and leaves them to their care before he leaves the scene, letting each of the slaves to their own devices. After some time, an undetermined long period of time, the master comes back. And just like after having a substitute for a few days, there is a reckoning to be had. It's time to see how the class did while the teacher was away. So he meets with each of the slaves to see what they did with the resources he gave them for the intervening period. And the first 2 report back that they turned a 100% profit upon what was first given to them. They double the investment of their master. The one given 5 talents makes an additional 5 talents, while the one given 2, right, it's basic math. And yet, the one given a single talent turns away and decides to bury the talent. But for the 2 who do turn the profit, to the 2 who return on the investment, they are told that they will be put in charge of many things for the faithfulness they had in this little much. And so they are given to enter into the joy of their master. But this one, this last one, The one who, rather returning investments upon the initial talent, apparently finds it fitting to take it and bury it in the ground, tries to keep it safe until his master returns. When the master does return, though, he's far from shy about his discontent. "You wicked and lazy slave," he reprimands. "You knew, did you, that I reap where I did not sow, and gather where I did not scatter?" It's a harsh sentence that the master renders. It ultimately ends this parable with a verdict that is not unlike some of the others we've heard from Matthew's Jesus, with the slave being banished to the outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. There's some real parts of the story that probably feel strange for us to hear coming from Jesus. Huh? I mean, first, anytime Jesus uses imagery that draws from the reality of slavery around him, we are reminded of the horrible course of our own human brokenness and history. While we learn from the images he sets up for us, we do so with the recognition that he himself came to topple such systems of injustice, to instead proclaim all those around him as heirs, not slaves, to the promises of God's love. Second, Jesus' parable of the talents is a response to wondering how we are to act when Jesus is out of sight. And the parallel between Jesus and the master who reaps where he does not sow takes from those who have nothing to give to those who have plenty and casts the unworthy into the outer darkness should also strike our sensibilities. So what then? What are we to hear from the midst of this seemingly messy and troublesome parable? Considering the urgency with which Matthew writes to his community, perhaps it makes the most sense for Jesus' parable to address us with the same questions as his followers. After all, who among us doesn't sometimes wonder, what are we to do? How are we to carry on? Last Sunday evening, the youth group gathered, and we watched a video about what it means to live between two trees. The first tree being the tree centered in the Garden of Eden, and the second tree being the tree of life from the book of Revelation. We are a people living between the trees, the video said, daily asking ourselves how to live into that existence. So Jesus' parable helps us to answer that very question. While here, while in this space between his departure and his coming again, while between these two trees, we are called and we are challenged to make the best use of the gifts and the talents that have been granted to us. Just as the master praised the two who multiplied what was given to them, so too are we called to share in what has been given to us as well. And yet there are those days when we may want to do the exact opposite. There may be those times when we see what we have, particularly as we compare it to what others have, and we see only a sense of twisted scarcity. We may see our own gifts and talents as limited. And so we take those things and we bury them where they sit and become stagnant. And in so doing, we relegate ourselves to an outer darkness full of jealousy and solitude. Instead, the recognition of this parable is that each has been given more than enough from the beginning. The master gives out of an abundance that's almost unfathomable. And it's in the shaping of such abundance then that the joy in the master is truly found and made complete. Because that's just it. You have already been met by the abundance of God. No matter how you may compare yourself, No matter what twisted sense of scarcity may haunt you, the abundance of God has met you freely and before anything else. Just as each of the slaves were given quantities beyond comprehension, so have you been met with grace and resources and a very existence that's beyond compare. In turn, we are each called to share those gifts, to share those talents with others, not bury them in the dirt. It's the same reason that Jesus' final words to his disciples in Matthew's gospel are to go and make disciples of all nations, to share with others that word that they have shared amongst themselves. It's the same ground on which Paul implores the Thessalonians to encourage one another and build each other up. Because it's the abundance that is meant to be shared. Because it's an abundance that comes first from God. So can we do it? Can we put our talents to good use? Can we avoid the temptation to double down and bury what we've been given into the ground? Can we use these gifts to meet others with the abundance that was first met by us? Can we use them? As Jesus tells the Pharisees in Matthew's gospel, to love God and to love our neighbors above all else. It's a tall order. And it's an order that only Christ himself ever perfected. Yet in that perfection is the gift offered to us. We have been met with the abundance of God that defies reason and all explanation. May we have the courage to live like this is true. Amen.